The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Welcome. Tonight I'm continuing a kind of a series that I've been doing the last few times I've been here on a set of qualities that are opened to, our hearts begin to open to a set of qualities, a beautiful set of qualities, as we practice, as we begin to explore our hearts and our minds. And the name of this list is the 10 perfections, the 10 paramis. And I'll talk a little bit about the list later, but I'll just dive right in today to the quality that we're talking about. We're on the third one, which is renunciation. Renunciation doesn't have a very good reputation often in our culture. It often feels like this quality of renunciation is like giving up things that we really want to have. That's kind of the flavor sometimes that it comes to. But, you know, in my exploration of this teaching, I discovered that it's not just our times that had a kind of difficult relationship with this word. In the Buddhist time also, this was not an easy quality to contemplate. There's a text, a teaching. I'll read you a little bit of this. This is someone came to the Buddha and said, "Sir, we are householders who indulge in sensuality, delight in sensuality, enjoy sensuality, rejoice in sensuality. For us, renunciation seems like a sheer drop-off. Yet I've heard that in this doctrine and discipline, the hearts of the very young monks leap up at renunciation, grow confident, steadfast, and firm, seeing it as peace. So right here is where this doctrine and discipline is contrary to the great mass of people. That is, this issue of renunciation." And so this image of renunciation being like a sheer drop-off is very evocative. You know, like stepping off a cliff. It's like, what do I have to hold on to if I have to let go of the things that bring me joy and pleasure in my life? What is this about? So how can we find happiness if not through sense pleasure? This speaks to kind of our usual way of being in the world, where we orient towards what will bring us happiness, often through the realm of sense pleasure. It has a strong hold on us, this pull to sense pleasure. In fact, it's kind of the way that ever since we were very young, you know, when we get something we like, there's a moment of feeling good, of happiness. It's, yeah, there's a way in which we are gratified when we get something that we like. And that moment of that happiness that comes when we get something that we like, or kind of in another way of it, we get rid of something that we don't like, a sense of being in control. And that also is in this realm of sense pleasure in a way. We control our environment, a sense of being in control of our environment. And the there is a kind of happiness that comes from that. And yet, since that is how we have found happiness in our lives, we cannot fathom there might be another way to happiness. And I think that's what the stickiness around renunciation is, partly because it's like we're being asked, you know, it's like renunciation, you're asking me to let go of the things that bring me joy and delight and happiness in my life. And why? You know, what will replace that? And so this brings in this question of, from the perspective that we usually have, the perspective we usually orient to our lives with, of happiness coming through sense pleasure, it's very hard to fathom that there might be some other way, some other kind of happiness that might be even more deeply satisfying than the happiness of getting what we want or getting rid of what we don't want. And in fact, the happiness that does come outside of sense pleasure, you know, there are forms of happiness, of ease, of peace, of joy that come through meditation practice. And those can be unfamiliar to many of us, you know, and that sense of dedicating the time to find a way towards a different kind of happiness. It's like, well, I don't know if I want to let go of this kind of happiness in order to find a different kind of happiness. We don't trust that different kind of happiness is really going to be worth it. There's a quote from the Dhammapada, one of the collections of verses in the Buddhist texts. If by forsaking a limited ease, one would see an abundance of ease, the wise man would forsake the limited for the sake of the abundant. And this is what this renunciation is pointing to. It's forsaking letting go of a kind of pleasure or happiness that is more limited for the sake of a greater happiness, a more reliable happiness. And I think the words, I want to talk about the words a little bit, because I think the words around renunciation all often both catch us and also can maybe help us to pick up some different flavors around renunciation that might be a little more amenable to us, more friendly or familiar or appealing, perhaps. So I think often, I did a little bit of dictionary work here. The word for renunciation is connected with a couple of words, disavowal and repudiation. You know, this rejection, pushing away of things. So that's a flavor, I think, that often the word renunciation brings for us. A sense of almost aversion, that we're supposed to be averse to things that we're renouncing, or we're supposed to push them away from us. A few other words that are connected with renunciation: to forego, to abandon. Let's talk about abandon first. Abandon can have we have associations with abandon that are kind of negative at times. Like we think about a mother abandoning her child, and that's not a good thing. And yet there are also ways in which the word abandon is used. One of the most common ways is abandon ship. And that basically is used when the ship is going down. And so abandoning here in this context means abandoning something that is not safe. So abandoning this sinking ship, we want to leave that. And so there's also this notion of abandoning, meaning when we understand that something is not safe, not reliable, there's a kind of a natural movement to let it go, because our system understands it's not helpful to stay there. So this is a quality that's interesting to reflect on, this notion of abandoning what is dangerous, abandoning what is harmful, abandoning what is not safe for us. This is part of the flavor that this word, renunciation, carries in this tradition. And yet it's hard for us to see, initially, perhaps, how sense pleasure is dangerous. And so I'll talk about some of that in a little bit. Then the word forego. Has some other synonyms that I like. To let go. Letting go. Now that has more positive connotations for us. Relinquishing, surrendering, yielding, releasing, to put aside. Some of these terms have a kind of a softer flavor to them. And yet the Buddha also struggled with this notion of renunciation. After this householder came to the Buddha and said, "This renunciation is like a sheer drop-off. I mean, what are you asking us to do here? Let go of what we delight in, what we love, what we rejoice in. This doctrine of renunciation is just contrary to what most people are going to be able to connect with." So that's what the householder said, and the Buddha responded, "So it is, so it is. Even I myself, before my awakening, when I was still an unawakened bodhisattva, thought, renunciation is good, seclusion is good." So he at least had the notion that renunciation was a direction that he wanted to head, and seclusion was a direction he wanted to head. But he says, "But my heart did not leap up at renunciation. Didn't grow confident, steadfast, or firm, seeing it as peace." And so the Buddha in this place, knowing or believing, having the idea that renunciation might be helpful for him in his path of practice to explore and find peace, he said, "So the thought occurred to me, why doesn't my heart leap up at renunciation, seeing it as peace?" And he recollected or reflected, "I haven't seen the drawback of sense pleasure, and I haven't understood the reward of renunciation. I haven't familiarized myself with it. This is why my heart does not leap up at the thought of renunciation." So, this notion of seeing what the drawbacks to sense pleasure are. This is not something that we usually reflect on or think about or even want to think about. Partly because the whole way that we've oriented in our lives is that having what we want brings us happiness. I'd like to also point here to the notion of letting go of the clinging to, the holding on to sense pleasure. This is a piece that I'll speak about a little more in a few minutes. But you know, pleasure comes and goes in our lives. Pain comes and goes in our lives. And a lot of our struggle comes because we are both trying to hold on to and keep the pleasure and push away and get rid of the unpleasant. And so it's this action of this holding and pushing away where this is really where the renunciation is asked of us. Not that we have to push away sense pleasure when it's here, or hold on to things that are unpleasant when they're here, but to begin to look at how am I believing or orienting to this sense pleasure. This is what's going to make me happy. And so the Buddha offers us a framework for reflecting on sense pleasure to help us begin to understand what's really going on around sense pleasure. There's the framework, the three-part framework that the Buddha encourages us to explore is, what's the gratification that comes with sense pleasure? What's the danger that comes with sense pleasure? And how do we essentially release or move beyond sense pleasure? Move to a deeper kind of happiness, a more... actually, a more stable kind of happiness. The happiness that comes with sense pleasure is inherently unstable and unreliable because sense pleasure comes and goes. And so this very act of trying to hold on to something that's pleasant, even as it's slipping through our, even as it's changing, it kind of results in what some people, one student of this practice called rope burn, trying to hold on to something that's slipping through our grasp. So I'd like to explore this thought of looking at gratification, danger, and the word used is escape from sense pleasure. So the first piece, looking at the gratification of sense pleasure. This to me is really great because the Buddha is not, he's not actually saying, push away pleasure. He's saying, get to know the gratification of pleasure. What is it? How does it happen? And the kicker, how long does it last? So we explore, so this to me, this teaching on the gratification with respect to sense pleasure, exploring the gratification with respect to sense pleasure, is asking us to start where we are. We are attached to sense pleasure. We naturally go for pleasant, want to get rid of unpleasant. And so while we're in the midst of doing that, the Buddha suggests, well, okay, you know, of course we're going to get some pleasure from getting what we want. So notice that pleasure and notice what happens to it. So this is his instruction to us. So start where you are. You don't have to artificially set aside that pattern of wanting to have pleasant things, but begin to get curious about that pattern. Get curious about the wanting. So what does this pleasure of having what we want feel like? How does it come about? What actually is it? And something I've looked at in this realm is often what we think we're experiencing pleasure around. No, there's times when there's actual sense pleasure. You know, like I definitely have sense pleasure when I'm eating chocolate. So there's that, you know, there's the actual moments of sense pleasure. You know, it's lasts, to my surprise, it lasts longer than I thought. It, you know, lasts about 30, 40 seconds after the chocolate has been dissolved. So it can last for a little while. So there's some measure of pleasure there. But what we grasp to, where we move there, is not so much to the actual pleasure of the taste of the chocolate, but in the moment that it's over, we grasp around the idea of having more, the idea of the pleasure that will come if we get something that we want. This is actually a big place of the gratification with respect to sense pleasure. It's the idea about having some pleasure. If we even think about in advance of something that we want, the anticipation of that brings a kind of pleasure. So it's a thought. Often it's a thought in our minds that brings this pleasure. It's not the actual thing. Then there is the pleasure of the actual experience. And then when that goes, what happens to the pleasure? You know, so most of our sense pleasures don't last very long. There's a moment when we get what we want, we have something that we like, or a few moments, and then things start to change. So the process here, there's a couple of pieces to this process, but just around the pleasure, you know, there's the having of pleasure, and there's that experience of pleasure there. And as that pleasure fades, because we have this a sense that getting what I want is pretty much the way to find happiness, you know, that's our pattern. You know, it's like maybe we do know at some level that sense pleasure is impermanent, doesn't last very long, having things is not ultimately satisfying, and yet there's kind of this belief that, well, having one thing isn't ultimately satisfying, but if I can arrange my life to keep getting things that I want, that's success. That's where happiness would come. It's like, that's as good as it gets. If I can arrange my life to get everything that I want and get rid of everything that I don't want. And so that moment when the sense pleasure ends there, that moment when the sense pleasure ends, the gratification of that pleasure goes away, what happens? We immediately end up in a place where we're looking for the next thing, the next experience. What's the next thing that's going to make me feel okay? So the gratification with respect to sense pleasure, yes, there is some pleasure there. It doesn't last very long. And that begins to point us to the danger around sense pleasure, or the drawback. And the Buddha talked about understanding what's the drawback of sense pleasure. Well, part of the drawback of sense pleasure is that the sense pleasure doesn't last very long, and so we end up a little bit stuck on a cycle. The sense pleasure doesn't last that long, so we're looking for the next hit. Where can I get the next hit of pleasure? Either by getting something pleasant or getting rid of something unpleasant. Where can I get that next hit? And so we're searching. This searching for the next hit of pleasure is another one of the drawbacks. It's not so obvious, this part, because when we're in that search mode, what's going on often is that our mind is creating the story or is focused outwards on the thing that we are headed towards. You know, we may at times feel the kind of dissatisfaction. It's like, well, I'm kind of bored. I can't find anything to want, or, you know, can't find anything to do here. And so there's a kind of a searching mode that we can begin to get aware, we can begin to be aware of. And yet often, if we land on something, and if we land on, oh, you know, the next thing I want to do is, you know, and it may be large or small. You know, it can be as simple as a piece of chocolate, but it also might be, oh, here's the next direction that the next thing I want to do. And you know, kind of orienting our whole lives around, you know, getting a certain job or having a certain house or, you know, just various things that we want to have and construct in our lives. And I have to say that it's not that there's anything wrong with moving in a direction in our lives. This is some place where often as we explore these teachings, it gets a little nuanced. You know, it's the exploration around sense pleasure, we are asked to look at this and question the value of orienting our whole lives around getting what we want. And yet, we have to live in our lives. You know, we do need to have jobs. We do need to buy food and feed ourselves and live in a house. And you know, we don't have to, renounce all of that. But what we are asked to look at is this whole orientation of this is where happiness will come. This is how I will be happy. I get this thing, this job, this relationship, all of these things. So as we explore this pattern, so it's not that we just try to become lumps on a log with this exploration around sense pleasure. So that's, I really want to be clear about that. It's not that we just, you know, renouncing everything, we just sit here until we die. You know, it's not like that. But we are asked to explore where we think we're finding happiness. So looking at that. And what's the danger in that pattern? So, as I said, part of the danger is that the sense pleasure doesn't last very long. But another part of the danger is this wanting, the searching for the next moment of pleasure. As we're in that search mode, we're thinking, you know, if we've landed on something, we've landed, oh, that's what I want. Our minds move into the idea of that. We start thinking about that. And we planning towards that. And as I said earlier, we can get some pleasure in the thinking of, oh, how great it's going to be when I get that thing. And in that projection into that idea of, oh, it's going to be so great when I get that thing, we don't notice that the very experience of wanting already has some agitation to it. As soon as wanting springs up, or as soon as this searching springs up, as soon as the pleasant ends and we're looking for the next moment of how can I find happiness? Where's my next happiness going to be? In that moment already there is suffering. There is struggle. The moment wanting springs up, there's a feeling of lack. That feeling of lack is connected to the wanting itself. It's not connected to not having something. In fact, that feeling of lack often springs up and then searches for something to fill that lack. It's not that we see something and think, oh, I don't have that. Well, sometimes this happens, you know. We see something and we think, oh, I don't have that. I want that. And so we feel a lack about a particular thing. That does happen. But very often this wanting engine is just operating, searching for something to want in order to get that next moment of having something. So there's two parts to this cycle of the danger around sense pleasure. There's the part about we get what we want, the moment we get what we want. In that moment when we get what we get the pleasure of the having, the pleasure of the having that pleasant thing. We also get the pleasure in that moment that the wanting, the feeling of lack, goes away for a very short time. But that feeling of lack going away, that actually, and this is something you can explore, look at for yourself, in my own experience of it, in my own practice of exploring, watching that wanting, watching the wanting go away, what I've seen is that the pleasure that comes when we get something that we want is some about the pleasure of the having the thing that we wanted, but mostly it's about the fact that the wanting has stopped for a few split seconds. That release of that wanting, the release of that feeling of lack, is a big part of why we're hooked on getting the next thing. So it's kind of a paradox. It's almost like our mind creates the wanting in order to find a way to let it go. So this, as we start to see this cycle and this pattern in our minds, first of all, we see that the wanting itself has a measure of agitation. It's got a measure of contraction in our system. Wanting does not feel good when we look at it. When we actually look at wanting, when we turn and feel into this is the experience of wanting, we recognize that it is suffering. And our entire history of life until we meet this teaching around wanting tells us the only way to get rid of that wanting is to get the thing that I want. And so that's what we do. We jump on that cycle. We try to get the thing that we want. If we get it, we get another moment of happiness and a bit of release of that wanting. If we don't get it, we feel like we failed. We feel like the universe is conspiring against us. We feel like other people are depriving us of things. All kinds of tricks our mind gets up to. And so this exploration of looking at the gratification around wanting, we start to see this, or the gratification around sense pleasure, we start to see how the wanting plays in to the gratification. The moment when wanting lets go, it plays into that gratification. And this is actually both a warning to us, it's a pointing to the danger of the gratification around sense pleasure, but also is a little pointing us in the direction of another possibility if we're open to looking at it. And that's the possibility that wanting doesn't have to be satisfied in order to release. Now, wanting is not going to tell you that. You know, when we're caught in wanting, the story that wanting is telling us is, I need that thing. That is where happiness will be found. And so when we're caught in that story, we fully believe, oh, that's what I have to do. So wanting is not going to tell you. If you sit there and watch the wanting is impermanent too, and it will go away. So that's a place you can begin to explore around this research, let's say, around gratification and danger, the danger of being hooked by that wanting. I've explored this quite a bit in my practice, and the main early ways I explored it were around small wantings. You know, wanting a piece of chocolate or wanting to go to Starbucks when I'm sitting at an intersection and see a Starbucks on the other side of the road, or, you know, wanting to look at people when I'm on retreat. Just watching the wanting rather than following through on these small moments, on rather than following through on these things that seem like, you know, what's the harm in getting a Starbucks? Or you know, what's the harm in looking at people on retreat? You know, it's not like it's a major thing that's being renounced. But the learning that can happen there, if you explore it, can be very profound. So an example, this was on a long retreat where I was. It's the looking at people, you know. It was a 3-month retreat, and we were asked, you know, just don't make eye contact. I was like, okay, don't make eye contact for 3 months. That's a long time. And this might have been my first 3-month retreat. And so I found myself really, I mean, even if I wasn't making eye contact, I had kind of said to myself, okay, they told us, keep your eyes down about 6 feet ahead of you. Don't look at people. So for the first few weeks of the retreat, I was like going to follow the rules. I was going to be a good yogi, and I had blinders on, and I was just looking down. And I did notice there was wanting. I wanted to look at people. I noticed that. But I wasn't like, you know, I was just going to be a good yogi. It's like, oh, there's wanting, but no, this is what I'm doing. Kind of like an aversion. That's the way we normally think about renunciation, right? It's like, no, I've said I'm not going to do that, and I'm not going to do it. After some weeks of that, and this was a long retreat, so I had plenty of opportunity to watch my mind. After some weeks of that, at some point, and maybe it was hearing Dharma talks about wanting, I finally realized, oh, there's wanting happening here. Maybe I should watch the wanting. Maybe I should look at that instead of just, basically I had kind of pushed away the wanting, pushed away what I wanted to look at, and just kind of forced myself. So there was an aversion in that pushing away. That's not true renunciation, actually. And so I began exploring the wanting. I still kept my eyes averted, but rather than it being a forced thing, rather than it's like, this is what I'm doing, I'm not going to look, it's like, wow, there's people out there. Boy, do I want to look at them. Wow, that's wanting. Oh my gosh, what does that wanting feel like? It had this like pull. I just felt like it was challenging in some ways, because it's like there was this like magnetic pull to just like, it wasn't going to take much to go, oh, look. But I felt that pull. I felt the pull of that. And then I began to get interested in what happened, because, you know, I'd be doing, this often happened to me while I was doing walking meditation, you know, I'd be doing walking, and I'd pick some place where there weren't very many people, because I'd noticed how much my attention was pulled and that wanting was there. So I'd pretty much be in places where there weren't too many people walking. But every now and then somebody would come through, and the wanting just kicked in immediately. It's like, nobody there, no wanting. That was an interesting lesson. You know, it's like, oh, there's conditions for this wanting. Huh, okay. I mean, it's kind of obvious when you think about it, but the actual experience of it, it's like happily walking along, doing my walking meditation, somebody walks by, boom, there's the wanting. Okay, watch the wanting. The person walks through the room, you know, they may walk in front of me, and it's like, whoa, really tempting there, because all I have to do is just like barely flick my eyes up to see who it is. Okay, just watch the wanting. And then they'd like leave the room and poof, the wanting would go. So watching how the wanting came to be and disappeared was very enlightening. In fact, the first few times I saw the wanting vanish as somebody left the room, the experience, this is where I really deeply learned that the wanting itself is so much suffering. You know, the feeling of that wanting releasing was like being released from a vice grip. There was just such a feeling of, oh, of release. So seeing that in this small area, you know, just looking at people, how much that wanting had created stress and suffering, the feeling of being released from a vice grip, it's like, wow, that's a lot of suffering for just wanting to look at somebody. For a little while after this point, I kind of got into watching the wanting, because it was so cool to watch it disappear. You know, it's like, ooh, I get to watch it disappear as soon as they walk out of the room. Oh, that's so cool. At some point, though, I began to see that there was a subtle way I was holding on to the wanting in order to watch it disappear. And at that point, when I saw that, the wanting around looking at people just went away. So that whole pattern, just a simple thing to watch, a simple kind of wanting to watch, learning how it comes into being, how it feels like a constriction, how that constriction releasing feels so deeply easeful, peaceful, was a huge lesson around this pattern of wanting in the mind. And kind of brought in the confidence that, yeah, it's really helpful to watch wanting. It's really helpful to learn how to not necessarily be hooked by wanting and follow through on it. Because what happens is that we just get caught on a cycle of wanting when we follow through on wanting. And yet there are times and things, it's like, you know, we want to eat too. It's like, I'm not recommending that we watch the wanting of eating forever. I mean, we would just starve, you know. So there are definitely things that we both want to do and need to do for our health. And so it might be interesting to kind of recognize, oh yeah, there is wanting here. It's like, renunciation here might just be noticing there's wanting and noticing that, yeah, this also is something that I need to take care of out of compassion for myself. Point or in some ways that as we begin to recognize that certain actions we take, they both have that wanting component mixed in, but they also have a compassion and a kindness component mixed in. And as we just begin to explore this process around wanting, we begin to tease apart the constriction that is the wanting from the part that is just our bodies, our minds needing to take care of ourselves, which doesn't have to have this constriction and holding around it. So another piece that begins to happen as we, and I want to point to this because this sometimes is, in exploring the gratification around sense pleasure, we begin to see that there's certain kinds of gratification around sense pleasure that are more about being present. You know, if you explore being aware and awake, mindful when you're taking a walk in nature, you may find that there's a kind of a more deep pleasure of the simplicity of just being there. You know, the pleasure of just hearing the birds and hearing the wind in the tree and seeing the nature, seeing the shadows and patterns of shadow and light. There's a very simple kind of pleasure that can come, that is a form of sense pleasure when we are present. And to me, I'm curious about this. You know, this to me is not the kind of pleasure that we are renouncing. Because, well, there can be, we can get hooked to that too. We can, you know, get greedy for that and feel some constriction around that kind of pleasure. But that pleasure will come when we have let go of agendas and demands about the experience. Taking a walk in nature, if we're just available for what's here, a deep kind of pleasantness can happen. In my exploration of it, it's more about connection and openness there. That kind of pleasure is almost more because we are not holding on than because we're trying to grasp onto it. And if you're available in that kind of way when you're out in nature and taking in the pleasure of just being in nature, you'll see when the mind starts to constrict around, ooh, you know, ooh, I need to take a picture of that. Need to capture that one. Or, you know, oh, I got to remember this. Or, you know, there's a way sometimes that we kind of compress or constrict around, or when's the next time I can have this? Or, oh, it's almost over. Oh, so we'll if we see the difference between the kind of constriction around wanting a sense pleasure, having that contraction to it, and the kind of pleasure of being just available for what's passing through, we'll see there's a big difference between those two kinds of pleasure. And this begins to point to some extent, to how we let go of the clinging to sense pleasure and move beyond to what's called the escape from sense pleasure, the letting go of the desire, the letting go of the wanting around sense pleasure. This is pointing to what the Buddha said was the reward of renunciation. In a way, that kind of sense pleasure that comes when we're not trying to hold on to it, when we are just available for the flow of experience, that's a little bit of the reward of renunciation. It's a different kind of happiness. It's not about demanding anything be a certain way. So the exploration of moving beyond trying to control our environment, our world, through wanting, controlling, fixing, having, to opening to what's here, there's different kind of levels of happiness that become available to us. All of them are better in a way than the happiness of having what we want, getting rid of what we don't want. And so this simple kind of pleasure of just being, when you're really present for that, in that moment, now the mind will come in and tell you that's not, you know, as good as something else, but in that moment, if you're really present, there's a way in which it's much more deeply satisfying. It's the simplicity of that. It's like in that moment, you don't need anything else. What is that like? What is that experience like? And then the Buddha also pointed to even deeper kinds of pleasure that are possible. He says, and this is another thing that I like about what this teaching around the gratification, the danger, and the escape. He says, you know, so okay, I haven't understood the danger of sense pleasure and the reward of renunciation. And here's a teaching from a different text. It says, on a later occasion, having understood the gratification, the danger, and the escape in the case of sense pleasures. So on a later occasion means it took time. So this again is something I like to remember. You know, even for the Buddha, it took time. It wasn't like he saw this and it's like, oh yeah, I'll let go of sense pleasure like that. It's like on a later occasion, having understood this. So it takes time. He says, having understood the gratification, the danger, and the escape in the case of sense pleasures, I abandoned craving for sense pleasures. And so again, here it's pointing to, it doesn't say I abandoned sense pleasures. I abandoned the craving for sense pleasures, that movement, that wanting to need to have things be a certain way. I removed the fever of sense pleasures, and I dwell without thirst, with the mind inwardly at peace. I see other people who are not free from lust for sensual pleasures, being devoured by craving for sensual pleasures, burning with the fever of sensual pleasures, indulging in sensual pleasures, and I do not envy them. Why? Because there is a delight apart from sense pleasures, apart from unwholesome states, which surpasses even divine bliss. Since I take delight in that, I do not envy what is inferior. So he's pointing to a couple of things here. There's the letting go of the craving. That itself brings peace. Then there's what he called divine bliss, which is basically concentration, that state. And you know, we can even get tastes of this when we meditate, even for 20 minutes or a few minutes, if we can connect for even a few minutes with the experience of breathing, just one breath after another, sometimes we get a sense of just an ease or a sense of happiness that's not connected to having a certain thing. But it's kind of just connected to this being. It's the mind that can settle and stabilize on some experience. That creates what the Buddha here calls a divine bliss, states of joy, happiness, tranquility. Very, very pleasurable states of mind. At one point, I was doing concentration practice extensively and doing long retreats and really cultivating that capacity of mind to just settle, just stabilize. And for certain periods of time, the mind would just kind of land. And there was so much tranquility, so much ease that the mind would be like, why would I want anything else? Why would I go after anything other than this deep, kind of happiness. And why we go after other things is because delusion comes in and wanting comes in, and wanting convinces us we want things. But, you know, in that moment, there's the recognition or the understanding of a deeper kind of happiness that's not reliant on having things be a certain way. That particular kind of happiness is reliant on the construction of and the competence with settling and stabilizing with the breath. It's not dependent on conditions in the world being a certain way, but it is dependent on conditions in this mind and heart coming into a certain way. And so that too is conditioned. And it can be grasped at. Boy, I'll tell you, you can suffer a lot by wanting a meditation experience back. You know, it's like, oh, where is that oh yes state? It was so good. How can I get it back? Oh, the suffering of that. So even to those kinds of beautiful states we can cling, we can crave. We're asked to also explore that. Again, letting go of the craving for those states. And then what the Buddha points to at the end of this is that there's a state of, what did it say? A delight apart from sense pleasures that surpasses even divine bliss. My understanding of that is this ability to begin to be at ease with whatever the conditions are, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. This state of equanimity is a kind of a non-reactivity to whatever's happening. And that the state of equanimity is closer to what I think the Buddha is pointing to in terms of this complete release from wanting things to be a certain way. That possibility of being at ease with whatever's going on in our experience. This is the true happiness or the deeper kind of happiness that's possible. And as we get a taste of that, we begin to sense or see the way that we can let go of our habit around clinging to sense pleasure. So this takes time. As the Buddha said, on a later occasion, this took time. And yet there is, I'll just read one last quote. With respect to renunciation, I just want to say this one last piece because it really ties into this idea of it not renunciation not necessarily being about that pushing away, but really about exploring, doing this exploration is what is it that I'm pulled to? You know, what about that wanting? You know, what do I think I need to be happy? And exploring that, really questioning what we think we need to be happy. I'm beginning to see that practice of gratification, the danger. How long does a gratification last? Is it truly satisfying? Are there other places, other ways that satisfaction can come? So this is the quote from Bhikkhu Bodhi, a translator of the texts, the words of the Buddha. He says, "The Buddha does not offer as a solution to our suffering the method of repression of desire. The tool the Buddha holds out to free the mind from desire is understanding. Real renunciation is not a matter of compelling ourselves to give up things still inwardly cherished, but of changing our perspective on them so that they no longer bind us. When we understand the nature of desire, when we investigate it closely with keen attention, desire falls away by itself without the need for struggle." This is the real renunciation. Not that we're pushing things away or having some idea, but this investigation around desire. and seeing for ourselves how desire is what is entrapping us. So it's time to stop. Thank you for your attention.